a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Son, we will call this meeting of the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission to order. This is September 24th, 2013. It's 9:30 a.m. We are in room 414 of the Capitol Building in Pierce, South Dakota. My name is Gary Hansen. With me today are Commissioners Christy Feagan and Chris Nelson. First off, we will check to see who has joined us via the telephone. Jeff Decker.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Good morning. Bill Schenkenberg.
Present, Mr. Chairman.
Tal Wieczorek.
I'm on, Mr. Chairman.
Jay Schultz. Mr. Schultz? Mr. Swear?
Here, Mr. Commissioner.
And can you hear us all right? Can you hear me all right? Apparently not. Scott, can you hear us all right? Marlene Bennett?
Present, Mr. Chairman.
And I'll ask you if you can hear us all right.
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Thank you. Brian Lysel?
It's Lyle, Mr. Commissioner, and I am here.
Thank you. Andy Gibson?
Yes, here.
Carrie Rozelle?
Present, Mr. Chairman.
Sherry Flatt? All right, there were a few people I did not hear. In case your phone was on mute, I'll repeat. Jay Schultz. Jerry there. Jerry Flatt. Sherry, we're not hearing you either. All right, we'll proceed then with today's docket. Docket TC 11-087 has been moved to the end of the agenda. First item before us is administration. Approval of the minutes of the commission meeting held on August 27th, 2013 that were prepared by Joy Lashley. Is there a motion?
Move to approve the minutes.
Are there any additions, deletions, or corrections to the minutes? Hearing none. Commissioner Feagan.
Feagan votes aye.
Commissioner Nelson.
Aye.
Hansen votes aye. The motion carries. The minutes are approved. Consumer reports. Status report on consumer utility inquiries and complaints received by the commission. Ms. Gregg.
Thank you, Chairman Hansen. The commission received a total of 114 contacts since the last report was prepared for the September 10th, 2013 commission meeting. 20 of the contacts involved telecommunication service, 36 of the contacts involved electric service, 7 of the contacts involved natural gas service, 11 contacts involved cell phone service, 27 contacts related to the Do Not Call registry, 1 contact was related to wind energy, 1 contact related to one call, and 11 contacts related to issues not regulated by the PUC. 1,347 of the 1,377 complaints received in 2013 have been resolved.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions of Ms. Gregg? Commissioner Nelson.
Just curious, have we seen any uptick in do not call calls since our state fair outreach?
Yes, we have. That was 27 contacts for the do not call. Quite a few. So, okay. For us, we have seen a little thing in those.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any further questions? If not, we are going to skip one item on the agenda, and we're going to move to Ms. Patty Gerpen, who just entered the room. What did she deliver to you? A charger.
Oh, a charger.
We had to figure out some way to get her up here. She listens to us downstairs to make sure that we do everything correctly and that things are running well. Among other things, throughout the entire year, 24/7, she's looking out for us to make certain that we take care of what we're supposed to take care of. And years ago, Patty's our executive director. For those of you listening who don't know, years ago, the commissioners used to do all of the administrative things, the hiring, and et cetera. And that gets to be a bit of a challenge when you're trying to do everything else. Excuse me. And so we thought it best to have the executive director take care of all of those items. And that has worked so well. We really, really, truly appreciate all the work that Patty does for us. And she has actually been engaged in working for the citizens of South Dakota now for 30 years. And so after you have worked for the state for 30 years, you get a pin. And that's pretty darn cool. We're all looking forward to working 30 years so we can get that. And I'm going to let you figure out how to open this up because I'm not going to try to pin it on you. But we very, very much appreciate all the work that you've done for us as the three commissioners. As a matter of fact, I don't know how many commissioners you've worked for, probably seven of us at least, and how many departments. Originally, you were, as I recall, you were hired by Governor Janklow, and you've been a department head in other departments, and you've done a marvelous job for the entire state of South Dakota. With that, you're actually getting a plaque, so you've really moved up. In appreciation of dedicated service, Patricia Van Gerpen, 30 years, 2013. Congratulations.
I'll manage to take it down. Thanks.
Thank you very, very much, Patty. We'll move on to our dockets then. Natural gas is our first item on the agenda. NG 13-004, in the matter of the filing by Northwestern Corporation doing business as Northwestern Energy for approval of revisions to its tariff section number 5. The question before the commission is, today shall a commission approve the proposed tariff revisions? First up, Northwestern. Mr. Decker.
Good morning. This is Jeff Decker with Northwestern Energy. This is the annual filing to update our fuel retention percentage. This percentage is based on data from 12 months ended July 2013, and this year's proposed percentage is 1.73% compared to 1.77% for last year. We would just ask for your approval of the new updated percentage today.
Thank you. Excuse me. Mr. Paulson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Staff has nothing more to add. We just recommend approval effective October 1st, 2013, and on less than 30 days' notice, as noted in the filing.
Thank you. Questions by the commission? I would like to ask one to start off with, and as Northwestern is the only natural gas utility that files a ratio, can you explain why? I know you don't have a lot of history with the commission, but...
The others, they include theirs in their PGA, so theirs just automatically goes. Northwestern's a little more transparent, I guess. They show us what they're doing. The others just, they include it. It just updates every month. Northwestern files their updates.
Great. Thank you very much. Other questions by the commissioners? Mr. Feagan.
I have a question of our council. Mr. Smith, do we need a waiver or should we put that in the motion for the 30-day?
You can if you want to. I don't really think you need it because the effective date is October 1st, but it's up to you. It doesn't hurt.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any further questions? If not, is there a motion?
I'm moving NG 13-004 that the commission approve the proposed tariff revisions with an effective date October 1st, 2013.
Discussion on the motion? Commissioner Feagan?
Could I just ask a question?
Please.
Of Commissioner
yes.
Nelson? Do you mind, Mr. Commissioner Nelson, if we put on that we grant them a waiver in case for some reason legally...
That would be a friendly amendment.
Great. And so with that amendment, I'll come back and take the mic and vote yes.
Or maybe I should say, if that's what it takes to get a yay vote, why, absolutely.
Are you accepting that as part of your motion?
Or I am, yes.
Okay. Then the motion has been rephrased by the maker of the motion. Any discussion on the motion? If not, Commissioner Feagan.
Feagan votes aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Hansen votes yes. Motion carries.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Telecommunication dockets, TC09-098, in the matter of the complaint, filed by South Dakota Network, LLC, against Sprint Communications Company, LP, regarding failure to pay intrastate centralized equal access charges and to immediately pay undisputed portions of SDN's invoices. The question before the Commission today, shall the Commission grant the stipulation for dismissal? And SDN, I believe you're first here.
Thank you.
Ms. Rogers, I'm looking down at my phone sheet.
Darla Rogers, appearing on behalf of SDN. As you can tell by the number of this docket, it's been around for several years now. The parties have reached a confidential settlement agreement, and therefore we are jointly requesting that the Commission grant the stipulation for dismissal and then close the docket.
Thank you. And I'm going to guess that Sprint is not going to object.
I believe Mr. Schenkenberg is on the phone. He can speak for Sprint.
Yes, we have Mr. Schenkenberg and Mr. Wieczorek on the phone. Mr. Schenkenberg?
I'm going to defer to Mr. Wieczorek.
Mr. Wieczorek.
Sprint is in agreement to the dismissal and believes the case should be dismissed at this point with prejudice.
Thank you very much, Dale. Ms. Kramer.
Thank you. It's Karen Kramer of staff, and we would recommend the Commission grant the stipulation for dismissal.
Thank you. Are there any questions by the Commissioners? I will move in TC09-098 that the Commission grant the stipulation for dismissal with prejudice. Is there any discussion on the motion? Hearing none. Commissioner Fegan?
Fegan votes aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Hansen votes aye. Motion carries. Brings us to the next docket, TC11-069, in the matter of the filing by South Dakota Network, LLC, for an extension of an exemption from developing company-specific cost-based switched access rates. The question before the Commission, shall a Commission grant Sprint's motion to withdraw? Sprint, this is your motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Talbot Wieczorek for Sprint. We are just requesting to withdraw from this action. It hasn't been very active in the last year or so, and Sprint has been, given the change of time and some of the other issues come up, is satisfied with not being a part of this action anymore.
Thank you. Ms. Rogers.
SDN would ask you to grant Sprint's motion to withdraw.
Thank you. Ms. Kramer.
And staff would echo that and recommend that you grant Sprint's motion to withdraw.
Thank you. Questions by the commissioners? Discussion? Excuse me, motion.
Mr. Chairman, in TC11-069, move that the commission grant Sprint's motion to withdraw.
Discussion? Commissioner Fegan?
Fegan votes aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Hansen votes aye. Motion carries. TC13-009, in the matter of the filing by Fibercom LLC for approval of revisions to its access services tariff number 2, VoIP. And the question today is, shall the Commission approve the withdrawal of the tariff filing? Fibercom, are you? Yes, you filed a letter requesting withdrawal. So, Fibercom.
Yes, this is Marlene Bennett representing Fibercom this morning from Consortia Consulting, and we had filed the VoIP language in the tariff early in the year, and once the interstate and intrastate rates became in parity in July, we just request that we close the docket and not worry about these tariff updates as they're not, they're kind of a moot point at this time since the rates are equal.
Ms. Edwards, are you taking this one?
Okay. Thank you, Kristen Edwards of staff. Staff would recommend that the Commission grant the withdrawal of the tariff filing as it is a moot point at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions by the commissioners? Ms. Wiest.
I have a question for the company. When you say that your rates are equal, are you just referring to your terminating rates, inter and intra?
Right, at this point in time.
Your originating rates, they're not equal, right, for intra and inter?
Right, but right now the VoIP language was for the terminating traffic.
And then it's when the originating rates, when that restriction on originating rates goes away next June 30th of 2014, then will you need VoIP language?
We'll probably assess that at that point in time. We haven't got a lot of requests for a VoIP percentage that we didn't accept and utilize. So at this point, the tariff was one option a company could take in order to have the rules in place around that VoIP language. And at this time, didn't find a need to use it on the terminating side. And I guess we'll just assess that when the originating requirements come into play.
Okay, thank you.
Questions by the commission? Is there a motion?
I'm moving TC-13-009 that the commission approve the withdrawal of the tariff filing.
Thank you. Discussion? Commissioner Feagin?
Feagin votes aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Hansen votes aye. Motion carries. Item 5, TC-13-022 and telecommunications in the matter of the application of Telrite Corporation doing business as Life Wireless for designation as an eligible telecommunications carrier. The question before the commission is today, shall the commission grant waiver of ARSD 20-10-32-43-02 and designate Telrite Corporation doing business as Life Wireless and ETC for the designated service area for purposes of receiving Federal Lifeline's universal service support. Telrite?
Mr. Chairman, this is Andy Gibson with the Jones Walker Law Firm. I'm the outside general counsel for Telrite, and with me today on the phone is president of the company, Brian Lyle. And we had, up until last week, anticipated this hearing and were prepared to move forward. But on last week, there were some events that happened, some developments with the company's operations in other states. And we felt it would be appropriate for us to defer this hearing so that we might file a supplement to the company's application to fully inform the commission of events in other states. And that is the procedural posture we find ourselves in today. Subject to your approval, of course.
Thank you, Mr. Gibson. Ms. Edwards, do you have any comments?
We are in favor of the commission granting the deferral so they can provide complete information for this docket. And if there's any other information the commission would like us to be gathering while it's pending, we can certainly do that.
Thank you very much.
And we'll stand by for questions. Thank you.
Are there any questions by the commissioners? Thank you, Mr. Gibson, for the explanation, and I'll look for a motion.
I would move TC-13-022 that we defer the docket till defer.
Thank you. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none. Commissioner Feagin?
Feagin votes aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Hansen votes aye. The motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners.
You're welcome, Mr. Gibson and Mr. Lyle.
Thank you very much, Commissioners.
In TC-13-108, in the matter of the filing by Sage Telecom Communications, LLC, for approval of its access services tariff number 1, the question before the commission is, shall the commission approve the access tariff? Sage Communications.
Kerry Rossell from Technologies Management, representing Sage Telecom. I'm ready to answer any questions you may have about the tariff filing.
Thank you. Ms. Meyerink?
Thank you. This is Robin Meyerink of staff. Sage filed an initial tariff, and staff recommends approval with an effective date of September 24, 2013.
Thank you. Are there any questions by the commissioners? Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, in TC-13-108, move that the commission approve the assessed tariff.
Any discussion on the motion? Commissioner Feagin?
Feagin votes aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Hansen votes aye. The motion carries. This brings us to the item that was moved to the bottom of the calendar, TC-11-087, in the matter of the application of Native American Telecom, LLC, for a certificate of authority to provide inter-exchange telecommunications services and local exchange services in South Dakota. The question before the commission is, shall the commission grant Sprint's amended third motion to compel? That is somewhat lengthy. I'll let Sprint begin their since it's their motion, let them start. There are a number of items for us to look at, and we will take those somewhat in order of the interrogatories first, and we'll just let Sprint form their foundation. Sprint, you are on. You're up to bat. Mr. Schenkenberg, is this yours?
Yes, it is. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. This is Phil Schenkenberg for Sprint. Sprint has moved to compel production of discovery responses in this case, and then amended that motion after there was some production made by Native American Telecom. This relates to discovery requests that were served following NAT's amended application, which was filed right at the end of May, beginning of June. We served these discovery requests on June 25th, related to items, for the most part, straight out of that application, as we proceeded down towards what was a hearing schedule that at that point was going to take us to hearing in October. Responses were due on July 10th. We didn't receive anything. And notably, we did not receive any objections to those requests either, and as I'll come back to in a minute, if a party wants to make objections under the rules, those have to be made timely or else they're waived. After we filed our first motion to compel, there were then some responses provided, some written responses and some documents. We had additional meet and confer sessions. And we filed an amendment to that motion just to make clear what was still outstanding, and that's why we have an amended third motion to compel. Since that time, we have received some additional documents. We received documents that were tied to our requests, document requests, 62 to 64, we received some but not all, and then we received the document requests related to document requests 20 to 21. So 20 to 21, which sought bank records, et cetera, had been limited by the time of our third motion to a 2013 general ledger and balance sheet. Those have been produced. So 20 and 21 are off the table, and we had advised Ms. Kramer of that yesterday morning. But the rest of the information, we haven't had the information provided, and NAT hasn't responded in writing to this commission as to why it hasn't. I guess perhaps just to end this high-level overview, there are objections raised in the responses that we received and attached to my amended affidavit or my affidavit. And to the extent those NAT is making those objections, those are waived as a matter of state law. Most particularly, NAT raises a tribal immunity jurisdiction, which I wanted to talk briefly about. As I understand it, they've taken the position, at least in the boilerplate objections, that the fact that they've reorganized as a tribal entity means they can't be required to produce discovery in this case. And I think there are three, if you're inclined to consider that at all, given that they have made this late, and I think it's waived under state law, there are two reasons you could deny it. You could deny it as insufficiently supported. The documents cited in that objection are not of record in this case. You haven't been provided them. There hasn't been a legal argument made to explain why that would support a finding of sovereign immunity. And so there's just simply a lack of record support. The second is, just from a common sense standpoint, they've come to you in this application, asked for authority, and if you decide that it's necessary for them to provide information for you to make that decision, they have to do that. And if they want to come and get authority from you, they need to play by your rules. And if they choose not to play by your rules, then they ought to withdraw their application. Would you like, that's kind of an introductory, Mr. Chairman. You indicated you might want to take these one by one. What would you like to do right now?
We will be taking the interrogatories in order, then we will take the document request. But I would like you to repeat, is it document request 20 and 21 that are off the table that have been resolved?
Yes.
Are there any others that have been resolved at this point?
No.
All right. Then I would like to have Mr. Swear give his 30,000-foot explanation, and then would like to have you go through each one of the items, and we will have you, Sprint, go first, and then NAT. Mr. Swear, it appears that you have not responded to any of these other than to the sovereign immunity argument. Is that correct? And do you wish to respond at this time?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, we believe that we have responded to the various interrogatories through our answers. Regarding the sovereign immunity argument, NAT is not alleging at this point sovereign immunity. NAT wants to comply with the Commission's rules and procedures. What we've done in that objection is we have simply informed the Commission and the interveners that we have indeed created a new tribally created entity. However, at this time, we are not raising any sovereign immunity defense because we do want to comply with these procedures the Commission has. So that was done for notice that there is a new entity. Next is, again, regarding the objections. Mr. Schultz and Mr. Schenkenberg and I have had multiple conversations about these interrogatories. We have provided Sprint with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages of discovery materials. They have all NAT's finances. The level of depth that we're going into in this CLEC application is just incredible. And yet we have abided by the rules and provided that information. It's my understanding that the only issues that we have today are interrogatories 55, 56, 59, and then 62 to 64. And then we have production requests 16 and 17. So the issues before the Commission today are much more narrowed than in Sprint's filings. And with that, we are prepared to talk about our objections to those six interrogatories and two production requests.
Thank you. Mr. Schultz, are you on the line with us?
I am.
Thank you.
Commissioner Hansen, thank you.
Thank you. We will then go to interrogatory number 55 and would like to hear from Sprint, first of all.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. 55 is, and a few of these are in the nature of questions one might ask in a deposition, but you can certainly ask in an interrogatory, fairly straightforward, and we're just not sure why we haven't had an answer. In its application on page 9, NAT provided information as required by statute about how it would provide 911 and E911 and route 911 calls to a PSAP, public service answering point. And they provided a response which didn't make it clear whether they were actually sending calls to a PSAP. And so we just asked that very specifically. Are these calls, these 911 calls that you claim to be providing to your subscribers, are they being delivered to a PSAP? And if so, what's the PSAP ID number on file with the FCC? We just want to evaluate what they're doing, and that information hasn't been provided. It goes to the validity of their application and their managerial and technical capability to provide the services for which they seek a certificate. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Schultz or Mr. Swear, who will be handling this?
Mr. Chair, this is Mr. Swear. I will be.
Hey, please go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, if you look at the answer that NAT provided to interrogatory number 55, we have very consistently said that Crow Creek Telecom LLC, or NAT, routes their 911 calls to the Crow Creek Sioux Tribal Public Safety and Police Authorities. On the reservation, that is who receives all 911 calls of customers, providing service on the reservation. Now, we're here today on a PSAP number that I believe is publicly available to NAT just as it is to Sprint. We have told them specifically how the routing works. We've actually gone into more detail than what the question actually asked for. Now, regarding the PSAP ID, again, that's publicly available information, and that is an objection that Sprint has used throughout these proceedings to thwart NAT's discovery efforts. So, again, we think that we have complied with that. We've told Sprint exactly the route and how it works on the reservation, and we think we have complied with that. Also, under 15.6.26b1, this is a CLEC application, and we're looking at managerial, technical, and financial criteria. I guess NAT fails to see how a PSAP ID number is relevant or reasonably calculated to lead to the discovery of admissible evidence. We've explained the routing. I think, again, this is just an example of delay tactics and issues that simply are not relevant to this CLEC application. But yet we answered the question, we provided them with the information. What they're asking for with a PSAP, it's my understanding that's publicly available.
May I respond just very briefly?
I have a question first. Mr. Swear, if it's publicly available, why not just provide that to them?
Mr. Chair, throughout these proceedings, Sprint has relied on that exact same objection, and it's been okayed by the commission that if these are publicly available, the rules of discovery don't require us to provide that. We're simply playing the game by the same rules Sprint has here.
Thank you, Commissioner Shankenberg.
Excuse Commissioner, me. Wow.
Were you ever a commissioner?
If this were publicly available and I could confirm this were a PSAP and that entity had a PSAP ID, we wouldn't be here. I can't confirm that. From my research, I think this isn't a PSAP. These calls are not being delivered to a PSAP. And so I've given Nat the opportunity to say this is a PSAP and here's the ID number. I just don't think it's true. And if it were publicly available, I wouldn't have moved.
Well, that's an interesting argument. Does staff know whether this is public or not? Staff is shaking their head. No, they don't know. Well, I better call you Senator Swear since I called him Commissioner Swear. Mr. Swear, if you're saying that it is public, would you be so kind as to provide that information as to how they can obtain it? I'm very curious. We don't want to have a stalemate here over something as superfluous as whether it's public or whether it isn't public. You know, this docket goes into a lot more important items than to be bogged down in things, semantics and questions of this nature. I'd really appreciate your cooperation in providing that, and I believe we're going to have to order it just because of the question that is involved here. Is there anyone on staff who has any comments on this item? Seeing none, are there any questions by the commissioners? Is there a motion on interrogatory number 55? Mr. Nelson.
On interrogatory number 55, I move to grant Sprint's motion to compel.
Thank you. And discussion on the motion. From my perspective, we can't, as I said, we can't get bogged down in questions of this nature, whether it is or whether it isn't. So if it is, in fact, one, we'll be interested in seeing that, and we will appreciate the cooperation from NAT.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just echo that. I mean, this is really a pretty simple question, and, you know, to the party that's being compelled here, assuming the motion passes, you either need to provide this very simple information or an admission that it's not going to a PSAP, one of the two, but we need to move past this. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Commissioner Feagin.
Feagin votes aye.
Commissioner Nelson.
Aye.
Hanson votes aye. Motion carries on interrogatory number 55. Interrogatory number 56. Identify NAT's total number of terminating minutes of use by carrier for each month from January 2012 to the present. Sprint.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This information was requested as part of Mr. Farrar, Sprint's expert witness, evaluation of the statements made in the application and testimony that NAT was financially strong and had the ability going forward to have income and a positive business plan. Mr. Farrar's testimony, particularly at page 41, analyzes this, the information that he had, and one of the things he tried to do was take total minute of use information for 2013 going forward and determine what total revenues were and determine what costs were and make an evaluation and come to an opinion and express his opinion on whether this was a venture that could succeed financially given the business plan. The information, he made some estimates. Without having the information, he made some estimates about what total minutes were. But what he'd prefer to do is use the actual numbers. And this originally did request information from January 12. This certainly could be, if nothing else, January 2013 forward. So, again, he can take that information, make it more accurate than the estimate that he did in his testimony, and address the claims by NAT that they are in a business model that is financially viable going forward.
Thank you. Mr. Swearer?
Thank you. Mr. Chair and the Commission, as you know, this is an intrastate CLEC application. What Sprint is asking for here is really NAT's playbook. This question was asked of the federal court and the federal court action in front of Judge Schreier. Judge Schreier found that the minutes of use, who the customers are, and that type of information is proprietary, confidential business information. So Sprint is trying to take a second bite of the apple after the federal court has denied this exact question. These are confidential, proprietary business records, and here's why. Sprint participates in what's called the wholesale market for this type of traffic. In fact, Sprint bids to carry this traffic for other long-distance providers, and then delivers the traffic to Crow Creek. So, and then Sprint doesn't pay Crow Creek. So what this interrogatory does, and this is an important interrogatory, what this does is it's asking the commission to do something the federal court has already said Sprint does not need nor can they have access to. They're simply trying to use this commission to continue the cycle of delivering this traffic, bidding to deliver this traffic, delivering it to Crow Creek, and then not paying for it. Who NAT uses as a carrier, their minutes of use, and this type of information, you are turning over NAT's entire customer playbook to a company that competes with them in the wholesale market. And by giving up this information, you may as well just give Sprint the entire playbook for this company. And again, it's been rejected by Judge Schreier in the federal court for those very purposes. And we simply don't see how on an intrastate CLEC application this complies with 15626B1. It's not relevant to the CLEC application.
It's not reasonably calculated to lead to the discovery of admissible evidence. It's done in order to circumvent what the federal court has already found here is not relevant. And again, to give this information up when we're talking interstate minutes would be absolutely potentially devastating to this company. And this is probably the most important interrogatory that has been asked of NAT, and it simply does not believe that this information should have to be given up in this intrastate CLEC application proceeding.
Thank you, Ms. Kramer. Did you have anything? And Mr. Stevenson, I know that you're the analyst on this. If you have something to, I won't be calling on you, but just catch my attention if you have something. Thank you. Any other staff with an item on this? If not, are there questions? I'm wrestling whether to have Sprint explain then from their standpoint. Commissioner Nelson indicated he has a question. We'll continue with that.
I guess my question would be for Mr. Schenkenberg. I understand why it would be appropriate to grant this so far as the total number of terminating minutes of use. But based on Mr. Schwer's argument, I am struggling with why you would need it by carrier. Can you explain why you would need it by carrier as opposed to a total number?
I can. There are different rates paid by different carriers, and different carriers have different arrangements. And my understanding is our witness would take that into consideration.
Any further questions? Commissioner Feagin?
So if I can make a follow-up on that, say Sprint, why couldn't they just black out the carrier yet, show the different rates?
If they did that, I don't think we asked. Yeah, I think we didn't ask for rates. But if they wanted to do that by numbers with rates, blackout carrier, I think that would get us there.
So, to follow up, the carrier's name would not be in the discovery?
I think that would be, if the rates are, I think that would be, would serve our purposes. And this will be marked, I assume, as confidential, so that the only non-business person, I'm sorry, the only non-lawyer, the only business people eligible to receive that are the individuals who have signed the protective order and are not in decision-making positions with respect to any wholesale pricing. And I don't agree with what Mr. Swear said about wholesale pricing, but none of the information could get to those people in the event that it were true anyway.
Thank you. Commissioner Nelson?
Again, Mr. Schenkenberg, I don't see anything in this interrogatory that asks for rates. Now you're bringing rates into the discussion. Can you explain that?
I agree, and we do know rates. We've had other information provided to us that tells us rates and who's paying and who's not paying. So we didn't ask for rates. We just asked for minutes by carrier. Hey. We will take whatever information we have, we'll use. If we have total information, Mr. Farrar will use it and use it to the best of his ability. What we don't want to have happen is ordered that we can't get the information and then told Mr. Farrar's testimony is deficient because it doesn't contain the information we weren't allowed to get.
Thank you. Any further questions? Ms. Wiest.
Mr. Schenkenberg, did you say you were willing to limit this from January 2013 to present, or what? I didn't quite get your statement there.
I think it would be acceptable to limit it from January 13 to present to tie to what Mr. Farrar said in his testimony was he was using estimates for.
Thank you.
Further questions? Discussion? Is there a motion? Commissioner Nelson.
I would move for interrogatory number 56 that we grant the motion to compel but limit it to terminating minutes of use from January 2013 to present, and those do not need to be identified by carrier.
Discussion on the motion? Commissioner Feagin?
Feagin votes aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Hansen votes aye. The motion carries. Brings us to interrogatory number 59 with respect to supplemental response to Sprint's IR 15. And it appears that much of this is going to necessitate some confidential discussion. However, we will see if it gets into that. Mr. Schenkenberg, can you?
I will talk around the edges of this, and I guess I'll defer to Mr. Swear to the extent to which this he does consider this confidential. But the question originally came from information that we had received under seal, so we wanted to be careful on that. As you can see from the question, the unredacted question, I hope, we're trying to understand the timing of payments and the application of payments that would suggest to us that what was done here was something like something very similar to what the FCC has in other cases found to represent a sham relationship, which is part of what Mr. Farrar's opinion is based on. And with that, I'll leave it at that to avoid any confidential discussion, but can answer questions if you'd like.
Mr. Swear.
Thank you. Again, we are talking about here, we simply don't think this is relevant to this CLEC application. Number one is this, again, covers interstate activities, which, again, the commission does not have jurisdiction over interstate activity. Second, we can't answer this question because what it does is it takes the information that NAT provided and it misstates what that information actually is. So what they're asking us to do is they're asking us to answer a question that's based on the premise of a misstatement of the facts. There's no way that we can answer this question based on how it's worded. It's a misstatement of the facts. If they want to pursue that in some type of cross-examination, that's fine. But the way that that question is worded right now, they have misstated the information that we've provided. Sprint knows that there originally was a netting relationship between NAT and Free Conferencing Corporation. They know that. We've been over this in a dozen cases throughout the country. So, again, they've taken information. If they would re-ask their question in a way that we think we can fairly answer, then we can take a look at it. But that is an absolute misstatement of what was provided. That's why we can't answer the question.
Mr. Schenkenberg, would you like to respond to that?
I would. I believe this to be quite accurate. I'm wondering whether Mr. Swear might be willing to promise the commission and Sprint that it will have a witness at the hearing able to answer these questions on cross as perhaps an alternative, because that's where this is likely to get fleshed out. But I believe these information is right. I put an affidavit into the effect that the information we receive supports the factual statements in my request. And Mr. Swear hadn't responded to that other than to tell you here, without reference to any documents, that it's not accurate. I think it is accurate.
Well, and if I may, Mr. Chair, right in our objection, we say that we object as being vague in a misstatement of the information provided. Again, I don't know how we can answer this question the way it's based. And obviously, you know, if a question is asked, that's a fair question. They can ask that on cross-examination.
but they shouldn't be allowed to ask a question that simply misstates the facts.
However, your answer would correct that. Ms. Kramer, do you have anything? Ms. Wiest?
So, Mr. Swear, will NAT have a witness that would be able to address the issues that were raised here?
I would guess that we would have a witness to talk about those issues. But, of course, if we're asked a question that's based on a misstatement of facts, then it'll be hard for my witness to answer that.
Is that sufficient for you, Mr. Schenkenberg, if he has a witness that should be knowledgeable at least about what you're talking about here?
If he has a witness who will, he can commit that he's got a witness that will be able to answer questions about the payment history between Free Conference and NAT, the application of payments made to bills issued, and its interplay with the agreement that was in effect between NAT and Free Conferencing, then we should be able to address this at the hearing.
And will you have such a witness, Mr. Swear?
I'm sorry, Ms. Weiss, could you repeat that, please?
And would you have such a witness, he said, a witness that would be able to answer questions related to payment history, application of payments, those issues?
Yes. Yes, we would.
And all of the other issues that Mr. Schenkenberg stated, not just the ones that Ms. Weiss stated, correct?
I think the third one was, and the interplay between the payment and the billing and the contract that was in effect at the time.
Mr. Swear?
Yes, we will be able to provide one of those witnesses.
Thank you. Ms. Weiss?
And then you would be satisfied that you could withdraw this one, Mr. Schenkenberg?
Based on that, I would.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for the cooperation between the two of you.
May I request that be reflected in the order just so we don't have a question later on as to whether it happened?
Yes.
It will be part of the order. Interrogatory numbers 62, 63, 64. Sprint has been provided with reading lengthy portions of these, we'll just move to Sprint. Interrogatory 62 through 64.
This is a very limited request. We asked some information about filings made at the federal Universal Service Company related to universal service fees paid, which relates to NAT's designation of various kinds of revenue into various categories and allows us to understand at least what NAT over these reporting periods believed it was and wasn't providing as a regulatory matter. And we received several different versions of each year's filing, and we were just trying to unscramble what was filed when. Really, all we want right now is signature pages and or electronic filing receipts. We know that there were amendments made, but things aren't dated, they're not signed. We don't know what was the last one filed, and without knowing that, we don't really know what NAT's final word was for these reporting years as to where these various categories went in. You know, you may hear from Mr. Swear that this relates to interstate matters, but what this does is it reflects NAT's belief back in these reporting years to what it was doing and whether it was providing intrastate service or intrastate service or in what category various revenues were and allows us to test its allegation that it's been providing local service under tribal law, an interstate service under its interstate tariff over these number of years where we think it's been operating unlawfully.
Mr. Swear, is it possible that you can help Sprint get their papers in order?
It would be, Mr. Commissioner, if you look at interrogatory 62, 63, and 64, they want us to explain the facts regarding these documents. Mr. Roselle from TMI, who is NAT's consultant, went into detail about why there were two documents. It goes into more detail than really what the question asks. So
So again, we're dealing with a 499A filing, which again, we don't see how it has any bearing on managerial, financial, or technical expertise. But the fact is what I'm told by Mr. Roselle is that these 499s are e-file, so they don't have any ink signatures. Also, I'm not aware of any receipt that the filing commission here gives to the filers. If there are receipts, I will certainly get them. But again, I just don't see how on a CLEC application, these 499As are relevant whatsoever. But I think it's also that Sprint has a misnomer of what exactly and how these are filed. There is no ink signature. They're e-filed, they're accepted, end of story. So they're asking us to produce documents, which it's my understanding don't exist.
To the extent that they exist, you can provide them?
To the extent they... Yeah, if the commission believes these are relevant, you know, we'll abide by what the commission wants here.
Any questions, Commissioner Feagin?
I just have a quick question on, you talked about the ink signature. Is there electronic signature on there?
The documents that we provided to Sprint are the documents that were e-filed. Now, I don't know if there's an electronic signature or not because I don't have the documents in front of me, but what we provided in these 499As are an exact copy of what was provided by NAT to the FCC. I mean, that's what we have, and they have these things.
Sprint, Mr. Schenkenberg?
If they exist, they should be provided. We ask for either ink or filing receipts, understanding the process. We have been provided, I think, with at least one filing receipt. USAC does send email receipt confirmations back, just as Amazon.com does when you buy something. And certainly for an important regulatory matter, Universal Service Administrative Company sends you an acknowledgement that they received your mandatory filing. So if they exist, we ought to get them. If they don't exist, we may take the position that these aren't legitimate filings and they weren't ever filed. And I think we should be allowed to.
Thank you. Questions by the commissioners? Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, in 62 through 64, move that we grant the motion.
Discussion on that motion? Commissioner Feagin?
Feagin votes aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Hanson votes aye. The motion carries. Document requests 13 through 16. Mr. Schenkenberg.
Thank you. These have been limited. We did receive mid-last week, I think, a number of documents related to the corporate reorganization. I should say all these three requests, 13, 14, and 15, relate to the corporate reorganization that NAT has alluded to in various filings. I provided Mr. Swear yesterday morning with three documents that we thought were referred to in other documents or in other testimony but not produced. So we had reviewed the universe of what we got and found three things. A Crow Creek Limited Liability Ordinance, which is referred to, but we didn't see in our production. And two tribal resolutions, CC 1307-293 and CC 1307-296. I haven't heard back from Mr. Swear about whether he's confirmed with his client that those exist and need to be provided. But that's what this has been limited to at this point, those three documents.
Mr. Swear, you stated you'd provide these. Is there a challenge?
No, I got Mr. Schenkenberg's email yesterday. I have provided his email to my clients as to what they think is missing. And if they exist, I will provide those immediately.
Thank you. Do you have anything further on this?
No.
All right. then as long as you're promising anyway, I'll make the motion to compel. I move to compel on documents 13, 14, 15, and 16. Is there a discussion on the motion? Commissioner Feagin?
Feagin votes aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Hansen votes aye. The motion carries. Item 6, document request 17. Mr. Schenkenberg.
This is Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. This is, we continue to be the recipient of allegations that we're delaying this docket. And this is a document that was referred to when they filed their amended application at the end of June. It's an amended joint venture agreement, and they responded to staff's data request saying, this document has been amended, and it's awaiting ratification. This is the document that governs the relationship among NAT, Wide Voice, and NATE, Native American Telecom Enterprise, how it's going to do business, how it's going to run the venture. And we've asked them a number of times for the document. We still haven't gotten it. NAT's response is, we've given it to you, but I've got an affidavit in saying we've looked at everything twice. We can't find it. Mr. Farrar says in his testimony we can't find it. We just want the document.
Thank you. Mr. Swear?
Yep. This one is my fault, Mr. Commissioner, because I thought in the slew of documents we provided last week that I also provided this amended joint venture agreement. I will have that to Mr. Schenkenberg yet today via email. So I apologize for that. I thought it was in the mountain of information we provided last week.
Thank you. Is there a motion on document request 17? Nelson.
I move on document request 17 that we grant Sprint's motion to compel.
Discussion? Commissioner Feagin?
Feagin votes aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Hansen votes aye. The motion carries. That deals with all of the items for this docket this time, so we will move to announcements. Please note that the next commission meeting will be Wednesday, October 9th at 1:30 in room 414. There is one more item on, obviously, you know where my position is, I guess. There was a request for fees from Sprint, and occasionally fees are granted when there's when there isn't any reason why the other party should not have complied. However, I don't know that the PUC has ever granted fees. Does anyone know of that? No one's aware of that, and there seem to have been some reasonable arguments on some of these items, even though we granted all of the motions to compel. Now that I've biased my position on it, is there any desire to grant fees? Do I hear a motion? If not, Commissioner Nelson?
I would move that we deny Sprint's request for fees at this time.
Discussion? Commissioner Feagin?
Feagin votes aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Answer votes aye. Motion carries. The next commission meeting will be Wednesday, October 9th at 1:30. Originally, it was a different date, and that is because it was changed after the agenda was announced. PUC offices will be closed Monday, October 14th, 2013, in observance of American Indian Day. A public input hearing for docket EL13-028 will be held Thursday, October 17th at 12 noon in the Centennial Rooms of the Student Center on the campus of Northern State University, Go Wolves, in Aberdeen, South Dakota. Campus guest parking is available in the lot along Washington Street. Public input hearing for docket EL13-028 will be held Thursday, October 17th at 7 p.m. in the community room of the Milbank Visitor Center. Commission meetings are scheduled for October 22nd and November 5th of this year as well. Any further announcements? Is there a motion to adjourn?
Move to adjourn.
Commissioner Feagin?
Feagin votes aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Hansen votes aye. We're adjourned. Thank you, everyone.